Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey, ladies, welcome back. This is episode 127, and today I am talking to my friend Laura Kelly. She's been on the show before. I don't know, in the 60s somewhere, not like 1960. I mean, like episode 60 something or other. I'm not great with numbers. Right after we recorded that initial interview, she told me that she's adopting from China. She adopted from China, the sweetest little boy Everett, and he passed away shortly after. And so this interview is heavy. And honestly, I approached Laura a little timidly, but I see her walking through the trauma and grieving with all her other little kiddos and her husband, and seeing her do it so publicly, but seeing her do it so well. And it's important. We're all going to be grieving something at some point. Some of us already are. Some of us have done it, but we didn't like maybe do it in the healthiest way. Grief is something we'd certainly rather not talk about. But I got to say, if you see someone doing it well, you got to ask them about it. And so at the risk of being completely insensitive and a total bozo about it, I just said, would you mind talking about this season and processing through it with me? Because I really think it would bless other people, because it's been so inspiring to see her honesty, but it's also been really heartbreaking. Anyway, so my producer, Rachel, as she was editing it, sent me a text and said, you need to warn people because I am like crying so hard right now as I am editing this. And so it's hard, you know, life is hard. And so I just wanted you to know that this is not the funniest episode around town, but I hope that you know me well enough and trust that I am bringing you things that I feel like will absolutely impact your life for the better. The episode is a little lengthy, and so I'm not going to say a whole bunch here. So let's go ahead and get started with my chat with Laura. Okay, so let me just tell you why I wanted to do this. The way that you have handled everything with Everett passing away has been such a heartbreak, but you've been so brave and public about it. And I think some of us who have never lost anybody have no idea like what even that would be like. But then the ones of us who have lost someone are taking such comfort in it. And so I wanted to hear all the things. I really usually have a pretty solid plan before I get on an interview. But just for me, I just wanted to sit in this with you and like explore all the parts of it, because I know you're comfortable doing that. And I really think it'll bless a lot of people. Yeah. So,
well, I can't promise much. So,
girl. So, okay. From what I know, actually, last time we recorded, you told me after we were done recording, hey, we're adopting from China. I'm like, oh my God. And so then he came home, Everett did. And then tell me what happened. How long was he in your home?
So he was in our house almost 6 months. So took like just shy of 6 months to get to him. So we kind of just really hammered it and got him home.
It happened quick.
It did.
It seemed like it did.
Yeah. And China was different for us, but we'd adopted before. So I kind of knew, you know, like all the paperwork that was needed. So we just really jumped on it. And he also received a medical expedite from U.S. Immigration and from China. So we had all the paperwork and everything. So that definitely helped us process quicker. So
you knew he had a heart, the same one as your other son, yeah?
No. Actually, pretty different. Eamon has something called tetralogy of Fallot, which is just one defect, but it has like four parts. And then Everett's, he had like a lot of stuff. So he was single ventricle. He had pulmonary stenosis. Transposition of great arteries.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like all those things. And then he also had something called heterotaxy, which is basically like in really simple terms, which I needed, is like things are reversed in his body. So his spleen and liver.
More than just the heart.
Yeah. Well, his heart was actually in the right place, but his liver and spleen were reversed. His stomach was in the opposite position. So heterotaxy can like apply whenever like organs in your body are reversed or switched. So he just had a complex anatomy plus a really complicated, complex heart.
Okay. So you knew that.
Yes.
I'm assuming.
Yes.
What prompted you guys to adopt a child with medical needs?
Eamon, basically, our other little boy, we brought him home from Ethiopia in 2012. And
he's adorable. Yeah,
he's a trip, man. Oh, he's a total trip. But when we were in process for Eamon, we actually were not open to many medical conditions. But when we were in process, I really felt prompted to change some really specific medical needs. And so we, after, you know, like just kind of processing that between the two of us, me and my husband, Josh, we changed them.
So from no medical needs to specific medical needs, you'd
like
be willing.
Big, okay. Specific medical needs.
What do you think made that happen?
I think Jesus, for sure. I think that that's just what he does, because it was very specific with Eamon.
Did you both feel the same way, or come along first?
It was really me. And then Josh ended up getting on board after, you know, I just said, I just really, really feel really strongly about this. And so we took a little time and then we changed like our parameters. And so we were actually matched with Eamon for another very specific medical need. And then it's the craziest story, but he ended up not having that specific medical need.
What?
And then he had tetralogy of Fallot, a heart defect. And so it was wild, but, you know, God just used Eamon to open this door specifically for kiddos who have congenital heart defects.
Isn't that interesting how like one step leads you to another step as you go, okay, well, I can trust you in this. Yeah. It was with my adoptions. They both had lots of drugs in their system. And
right.
If I hadn't seen it with my daughter that she was healthy and
right.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't have been willing to do that with my son.
Yeah.
So with Eamon, had you had any major surgeries with him? You had, right? I feel like I remember that.
Yeah. So Eamon came home when he was 5 months old and immediately went to the cardiologist the next day, immediately started medication for 3 weeks, and then he had open heart surgery. I mean, he's doing really well. He had a hard recovery. We were in the hospital for almost 4 weeks, but is doing really well. He'll need another surgery eventually, but right now has been really great.
Okay. So then Everett, you knew it was going to be complicated.
Yes.
You brought him home anyway.
Yep.
Was Josh on board with an even more medically complicated adoption?
Well, in the beginning, both of us were just basically terrified, and we both thought we were done adopting. We are also a foster family, so we have a foster daughter. We kind of thought we had moved out of the adoption world and into the foster care world. Okay. But again, I just really felt a prompting that there was a little boy in China. So our sister-in-law is from China, and my brother-in-law speaks Chinese and teaches Chinese. And I don't know why, but I just specifically felt like there was a little boy in China who had a heart defect. So it took us a little bit to get on the same page, because honestly, I thought Jesus was crazy. But once we got on the same page, it was like we couldn't get to him fast enough.
So tell me about how that is when God puts something on your heart and you're like, what? This is like out in left field. This doesn't make sense.
I just cried a lot. We have this wall in our house, oddly enough. It's like this little tiny wall, but I have a whole bunch of numbers on it. And
yeah,
I had collected sixes, which sounds totally satanic. We had like a whole bunch of sixes. But But they were like technically, legally six people in our family. And so even though we had a foster daughter. And so I just started, it was so weird, but he just kind of used that number of saying, like, you've collected these sixes because you think this is how it's going to be, but this doesn't really mean anything, Laura. It's just a number on your wall. Like, there's more. And that sounds so silly, but I still remember sitting on our couch just staring at that wall thinking, God, I'm going to change all my sixes. Like, this isn't how this, we're done. Like, this is not how this is about to go down.
I like my sixes.
Yes. And so, I don't know. It was just, it was a lot of crying for me, and a lot of kind of back and forth between me and Josh, because we just both thought that it was nuts, because we were, foster care is just so time consuming. And so we've just been really working hard at that, and to throw this on top of it just kind of really threw us for a loop.
So are you, so you're possibly adopting your foster kids at this point as well, or
we are still in her process of just letting the system do what it needs to do while we love and support her and her birth parents. And we just are kind of waiting to see how that shakes out.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been the biggest, longest road and mess, but also just has taught us a lot. So yeah, we're just still riding that one out.
Okay. What do you do with all your photos? We all have so many photos. Unfortunately, a lot of them stay on our phones and take up all of our storage space, but we all have our favorite photos. I know this weekend I went on a girls' trip and we went to the beach, and I got so many good pictures, like so many good pictures. So for those favorite photos that we have, you have to check out Canvas People. They print your favorite photos on Canvas for a really unique and beautiful print. I think I'm up to 11 Canvas People canvases in my house right now, and I genuinely love them. They're my favorite memories that are printed to cherish, and the prints are so beautiful, very high quality. I know you're gonna love Canvas People too, so I have a special code for you that you can use to get an 11 by 14 canvas for free. This is a $69.99 value. All you do is pay shipping and handling. So to get your own 11 by 14 Canvas People print for free, just visit canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, and then enter the special code MSW. This is a limited time offer just for today's listeners. So go to canvaspeople.com today and use code MSW for your free print. So Everett comes home.
Yes.
He is absolutely the loveliest.
I know,
and
he really was.
Sits on the kitchen counter all the time, and I just love seeing his face. And so then you knew that a surgery was coming.
Yes.
And what were we doing with that surgery?
What happened with Everett is he needed something called a Fontan, which is a surgery, but he wasn't even a candidate for the Fontan in the condition that his heart was in at that point.
Okay.
So what they had to do was they had to get his heart in a good enough condition to get the Fontan, which is what he would need to live.
So this was a life-limiting condition.
Yes, yes.
You knew that he was,
yes,
if he didn't get this surgery, was not going to make it.
Yes. So we came home and basically started this whole process of, because like our cardiologist and our pediatrician, they only had so much information through his file. So we needed to get him home and then get him in their hands. And so we basically began that process of going to the cardiologist. And then we had to do things at the hospital, like heart cath. They needed very specific numbers for Everett. And they needed really like detailed information about his heart and the way it was functioning and the way it worked and his anatomy. And so we had a heart cath at Vanderbilt, and I'm not speaking ill will about Vanderbilt because Eamon had his surgery at Vanderbilt. We love Vanderbilt. They are just invaluable to our city and our community, but I'm speaking more to the complexity of Everett's heart. And so what happened is after his heart cath, this big team of cardiologists and surgeons and transplant teams sat down and looked at these results, and none of them would even attempt the surgery. They just did not see a way. They didn't think that his heart was in any kind of condition to handle what needed to happen. And basically we were told we're going to put him on meds to keep him comfortable and to try to increase his heart function if it can be done.
Okay.
So then we set into that plan, and we were going to our cardiologist every week, our pediatrician every other week. They were taking very specific numbers because these were heart failure medications that he was put on. And so they're supposed to, you know, kick in very quickly. So they had to monitor all that very carefully, and it ended up that nothing was really changing for Everett. So our cardiologist had colleagues at some very predominant pediatric heart hospitals. And so she ended up sending out his file to different hospitals and her different colleagues and asking them to take a look and to see basically if they could find hope for Everett.
Can I just pause for a second?
Yeah.
Where's your mama heart in all this? Like,
It was a mess because, you know, like we had to ask all these
really tough questions that no parent should ever have to ask. Like, you know, what if he doesn't receive surgery? What are we looking at here? And yeah. Me and Josh sat in our cardiologist's office with Everett. And I just specifically remember her saying that what he would die from was very painful. The condition is very painful and that it was no quality of life. And when we left, we both were terrified of surgery, but we also knew that's not what we wanted for our child. So it was very torn because from the beginning, because she's Eamon's cardiologist as well. And she had just said, Eamon, there was a path. Like, we could see a path for Eamon. And with Everett, we just don't see that path yet. And she said, but I'm working to find that path. So, okay. Yeah.
Gosh. Okay. So she finds other people, someone else takes the case on?
Yes. So she sends out his information, and one world-renowned surgeon who only takes very, very complex cases, people travel from all over the world to have him work on their children. He accepted Everett's case, and he said that he thought that he could see a way to get Everett to the Fontan. Like, he said he thought he saw the path.
Okay.
And so he was at Mott Hospital in Michigan. And so then we kind of set out on that path of getting ready for this really complicated, hard surgery. But our cardiologist said, if I had a child that had Everett's condition, she said, I would want Everett in this man's hands. Like, I would put my child in his hands. She said, if that says anything about who he is and what kind of surgeon he is and my confidence in him.
So then did you go to Michigan or he came to you?
Yes. No, we went to Michigan.
Just you and him or everybody?
No, me and Josh and Everett, we all went to Michigan. And so we left our other kids at home.
All right. So you're going to get the surgery.
Yes.
The surgery went well and it was the recovery that was a problem, or the surgery didn't go well? Because I feel like there was hope after.
Yes. So it's the craziest thing, but Everett had this surgery and he just could not recover. And he would have these, he went into cardiac arrest twice. He would have these spells of crazy heart rhythms. I mean, this is a very predominant pediatric cardiac hospital, and they would have their experts look at his heart patterns and they're like, we don't know what this is. They could not figure out what was going on with him. And they came back to us eventually and said, you know, we've got to do another surgery. Like, this isn't working. So we ended up doing another surgery just like maybe 4 days after his first surgery.
Had he ever woken up?
Yes. Yeah. So he had woken up and was not like fully with it because they're still trying to keep him comfortable, but he was asking for his water. He wanted his water cup. He would say my name. He wanted to go swimming because he loved going to the wave pool and swimming during the summer. And we cracked up because at night, like, he would, when he was asleep, he would talk in Mandarin to the nurses. So they were like, he was talking in his sleep in Chinese. And so he was awake briefly, but then immediately went in for another surgery.
How was that for you?
Oh, God. It was terrible. It was awful because you just, I actually wrote his surgeon a letter at Christmas because one of the things that I'm like so sad about is that these people who poured into him and fought for him and fought alongside him never got to see him, you know, but briefly right before surgery, the way he was. And I just struggled with wondering, number one, are we going to leave this hospital? You know, because when you have kids that have serious medical needs, death is something that you think about. You know, you think about they could die. And so I thought about that, but then I also thought about, you know, will he ever be the same? If we do get to leave, will Everett be Everett when we leave? You know, how will this work? Yeah. So just a lot of fear and a lot of sadness and just kind of, and being in another state, you know, you feel removed and kind of lonely. And so, you know, just kind of all those factors just kind of spun through your head all the time. So
did Josh stay with you the whole time or did he eventually go back?
He stayed for, I can't even remember how long as he could. And then he actually had to go back to Tennessee. And then my friend Ashley from Florida flew in and stayed with me for a period of time, which was really nice.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's something to be in that holding pattern and kind of not have anything to do.
Yes. So I would like get to the end of the day and just be like, what did we do today? You know, it's like, because you are doing things, but it's kind of like, it's just chaotic. And I kind of reference, I say the hospital is a time warp, that Ulta, the makeup place, is a time warp. Yes. Like IKEA is a time warp. You walk in and then you emerge like 15 hours later, like what just happened.
Yes. So the sun's not even up anymore. You don't know what day it is.
You're like, yeah, the hospital is definitely a time warp for sure.
Okay. So how are your kids doing with you being gone and Everett being gone, and they love him and he just got here and now he's not here? And how did that communication go?
It was okay. We did FaceTime with them and we, you know, did all that. We also had a lot of support at home. So it was summer. So like one of our friends runs a kids camp. So they got to do a week of kids camp. You know, they were with friends and family. And I think everybody at home that was caring for them. And we also had a friend of ours that's, she's a college student, but she was like staying at our house so that they could still stay in their home. So that was nice. But I think everybody's focus was just, you know, what can we do to help them keep their minds off, like not going through that. So
that's good. I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah. And we did have a very honest conversation with them before we left that this is very serious and that Everett could die. But if we don't do this, then it's for sure Everett's going to die. Like, we couldn't tell them when, obviously, but we had to have that conversation with them because we didn't want to blindside them. We wanted to be honest with them.
How did they respond to that?
Oh, it was terrible. it was really sad. They all cried. I don't talk well when I cry, but I sound like a crazy person, but they all cried. And Everett was super sweet because he was with us and he was like walking. He's the most compassionate child. So when anybody else would cry or get upset, then he would cry and get upset, but he wanted to like touch you and hug you. And, you know, and so he's walking around hugging everybody like while we're doing, like while we're having this conversation. And
did he understand what?
No, he was three. He actually got his English very quickly, but he was still working on it as well. So, you know, but we didn't have to like, they actually gave us a translator at the hospital, but we did not necessarily need one.
Okay.
So they just kind of that as backup just to reiterate everything we were saying. So,
okay. My problem with eating well is that it takes cooking, it takes time, and realistically, I'd rather spend that time doing anything but cooking. So that's where Daily Harvest is the perfect solution. It's healthy, it doesn't take any real cooking, and it hardly takes any time. So I have more time to do things that I want to do, like I paint my own nails. I wish that I had someone do it, like a fancy person, but I don't. And I am loving baths lately. That might be too much information, but it gives me more time to do those things. Daily Harvest gives perfectly portioned frozen superfoods right to your door with your choice of smoothies, soups, breakfast bowls, or plant-based sundaes. It gives you a chance to try a bunch of new things because a lot of times there's these superfoods we're supposed to eat, but we don't even know how to say them sometimes. Maybe that's just me. Daily Harvest cups are stored in the freezer until you're ready to make one. Smoothies take 30 seconds, soups are ready in 5 minutes, and things like overnight oats and chia parfaits can literally be made while you sleep. Daily Harvest is the fastest, most convenient way to up your fruit and vegetable intake. Go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code MSW to get 3 items for free in your first box. That's promo code MSW for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. That's daily-harvest.com. All right. So he has the second surgery. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so he has the second surgery, and then basically it's just kind of downhill from there. Well, not downhill. He would do well, and then he would drop back off. He would do well, and then he'd drop back off. And so they just could not figure out what was going on in his body. And then we had like our best night one night, and he was more awake, and he like had his little leg crossed and was like tapping his foot. And we just had to get him like breathing and going on his own again. So I went to bed super late, probably about 3 o'clock in the morning. And Josh was not there. My friend Ashley had gone. It was just me. And so I went back to his room the next morning and it was basically chaos. They were like, we have to intubate him again, basically put him on a breathing machine again. And they were like, we need to do it now. His stats were dropping. Yeah. And he ended up going into cardiac arrest while they were intubating him. And so they're working on him. You know, his room is filled up. They've made me leave. I'm standing out in the hallway watching it. And it just all unfolded. And he ended up being in cardiac arrest for about 44 minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah. So,
and then at that point, you're not sure about brain function.
Yes. So they actually ended up putting him on a life support machine called ECMO. Okay. And so it's basically working his entire body for him, but they got his heartbeat back, but he is on this life support. You know, there's like 1,000 questions when somebody has been in cardiac arrest that long. So they just immediately dive into trying to get answers to all of these questions and running all of these tests and trying to get his lactic acid down and, you know, monitoring all of, you know, his internal organs, because when you go into cardiac arrest, you know, the biggest thing that you're worried about is your internal organs and your brain. Yeah. So we started, you know, they put a head thing on him to start monitoring his brain function, his weight, like brain waves and all that. So this is what the crazy part is that his heart, the atrioventricular valve that they had to go in and repair, was actually leaking worse now at this point than before surgery. Oh, but his heart function was better. So they were like, you know, this is crazy. His heart function is better and this is good, but the valve is leaking worse. And now we're like looking at all of these other things, like are his internal organs okay? Are they working properly? Are they shutting down? Does he have brain damage? And if so, how severe is it? And so it was just days of trying to figure all of that out then.
Can I ask you, at this point, you've seen a lot of traumatic things.
Yeah.
And there's one thing, and I'm not saying it's not hard if it's a grown up, but if it's your kiddo, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So how are you, I mean, you went through trauma, you visualized and you heard, and I'm sure that it's all like burned in there into your brain.
Sure.
How are you doing with that? And what's that been like?
It is unlike anything I've ever experienced. My mom died suddenly in 2011 and I thought I had experienced like deep loss, but this was a whole different ballgame, at least for me. And it's just kind of this every day you walk through it all over again. And it's just kind of processing and, you know, you feel so much guilt and so much regret and so much.
What do you feel guilty about?
Oh my gosh, I just, and I know like, and this is the other problem is like your head and your heart and your body, like all battle for who's going to win out on what the reality, like reality is we made the best decision with the information that we had for Everett. But there's other part of you that's like, and I know a lot of it is Satan too, but it's you were his parents, you know, he was three, you were his person to take care of him and to keep him safe and to make good decisions for him and protect him. And you feel, whether it's right or wrong or Satan or not Satan, you feel like you didn't do your job. And like, not only did you didn't you do your job, but it's like you failed in the ultimate way.
Gosh.
And we know it's not, that that's not truth. Like we, but you still battle that every single day because it's just, I feel like, at least for me and Josh, we can't help but not. Like, we just feel like we failed him.
How has Josh been, how has he been handling it? Because he, I'm assuming, during all the trauma of you seeing all those people rush in and work on your kiddo and you're getting kicked out of the room, like, I mean, it's got to be the very opposite of it. Yeah. I mean, you want to be there and, like, involved. But then you were the only one there.
Yeah.
And so how has your experience been different than his? I mean, I'm just wondering about that.
His was a different kind of, and we talk about it all the time, but I called him and said, you got to get here now. Like, he's in cardiac arrest again. They're still working on him. And so he's in Tennessee. So he's literally like speeding to the airport. He said that he went home and like didn't get anything. Like so he ended up coming to, you know, Michigan with like no underwear and no two, like he didn't get any. He said,
because you know you're supposed to go home first, but
he said, I went home, but I didn't get anything. So, and then he's on this airplane and, you know, I cannot. Like, you know, he just says it's the worst airplane ride of your life. You know, you just can't get there quick enough. Nobody is going to move fast enough for you in that moment. But a lot of his is, we work in like a really, me and him are basically pretty opposites. And so I'm kind of like the gas, like go, 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 go. And he's the brake. Like, okay, hey, we need to pull back. And oftentimes he says, you know, I'm the brake. I should have said wait. So he feels like he let Everett down on a different way of, I should have said no. Like, I should have put the brake. Like, I'm supposed to be the brake.
On surgery, you mean?
Yes, on surgery. And okay. So he feels that. And we talk about how it's like this continual circle. It's like a loop. Because when you think those thoughts, when you think we failed him, we let him down, I should have been the brake, we shouldn't have done surgery, then you go back through the whole other process of his valve was already severely leaking. It was only going to get leakier. Like, so if we wait, then surgery is going to become harder. Well, if surgery becomes harder
and more painful.
Yes. Yeah. And so then it's like, well, if we don't do surgery at all, he dies. And not only does he die, but what he dies from is very painful and, you know, no quality of life. And like you do this full circle of just, and it's constant. It's like this constant circle of your doubts and your fears. And then you back them up with like reality. Okay, well, what was reality? And it's just like emotion and reality, and you just circle, you circle.
Wow. And yeah. And then meanwhile, you have a lot of other kids at home and a life you've got to lead and your brain is sucking up all your energy.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's just like constant.
Okay. So he's in the hospital. It doesn't get better.
Right. So basically what ended up happening was Everett was brain dead. So he was fully brain dead. His brain was not functioning at all. So that means like his body doesn't function. His brain doesn't tell his heart to beat. His brain doesn't tell his liver to work. Like his body is shutting down. So we ended up having all of our, like Josh's dad and Josh's sister and our niece brought up all of our kids, except for our foster daughter who is 3. And so she stayed at home. So they drove everybody up to Mott basically for everybody to tell him goodbye. So they moved us to like a transition room, which is basically like this very sweet room. It's big and quiet, but it's just you. They call it a transition room because you're transitioning out of the hospital and you're not bringing your child home with you.
Oh my gosh.
So it's for families that know their children are going to die. And so we took a day two-ish just to be with Everett and to tell him goodbye and, you know, to do handprints and cut pieces of his hair. And we let our kids do crafts with his thumbprints. And he just, you know, we watched movies and played music and, you know, we're just with him.
Was that helpful?
It was helpful. Everett died just a couple of days before his 4th birthday. So we had like a little birthday party because that was one of Harper's like biggest things was she goes, we don't get to celebrate his birthday. And so we got balloons and, which oddly enough, they wouldn't let me bring the balloons in the hospital. Cutting them in front, it was just traumatic, but because they were latex, but nobody told me. But we had like cake.
And so you had to let go of the balloons before.
I swore that I wish somebody had it on video because I walk in, we walk, Josh lets me out at the front door to go up with like all these colorful balloons we got. And nobody told us that we couldn't do latex, and we had gotten latex balloons. And they're like, I'm sorry, ma'am, you can't take these up. And I go, you don't understand. My son is dying. And it's his 4th birthday. And just they come, they were like, I'm sorry. And they wouldn't let me take them up. And so they're like, take the balloons from me. And like,
I feel like I would have gotten violent at that point.
Oh, I was like sobbing. It was really, I felt really bad for the person afterwards. and so I, you know. So we had cake and fun plates and, you know, pizza and all that kind of stuff. So,
okay. So what's the vibe of that? Like, I can't put my brain around it.
It is bizarre. It's absolutely insane is what it is. And you like bounce between like, what are we doing? Like, I cannot believe this is what we're doing. And then you're like laughing at daddy's home on the TV with your kids because, you know, something funny happened on the movie and Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell together are magic. But
yeah, but do you feel like you can't do that? Some, I'm like, you're in there with your, no, your dying child.
Like, I had to do that because I also have four other children that are processing. And honestly, like, I think that if you stay in like that kind of sadness, it's, I don't know if how good that is for you to, you know what I mean? Like to remain in it constant. And so after we had like celebrated his birthday on the first day that the kids were there, I still remember Josh said, that was good. And it was, because it was like they got to be with their brother. Not like we hoped or dreamed or imagined, but they still got to be with him and they got to celebrate him. And there was laughter and there were smiles and there were tears galore too. And there was pain. But we've learned that, and we learned this with my mom, joy and sadness can coexist. They can be together. And if I had to sum that up, that's exactly what that day was. It was holy, but it was also, it was joy and sadness sitting together and just being with one another. And that's what the next day as well was, because we did it again the next day with him, just differently.
Talk to me about your choice to do this all so publicly, because I think as much as possible, a couple thousand people feel like they were really along for the ride as well. Right. And like were grieving and... I mean, it was, wow. Like, I couldn't believe how much I was praying for him and thinking about all of you. And I have never met you in real life. So why so public? You did it this way when your mother passed away.
Right.
You grieved very publicly. So talk to me about that. Some people would maybe say not to do that. Or, I mean, you know, everybody does it differently. But yeah, talk to me about why.
I think for me, number one, for our family, we desperately wanted prayers for Everett. Desperately. I cannot put that enough into words, how we wanted prayers for him. And we believed that God was going to heal him. We really did. And so, number one, we just wanted prayers. We wanted people praying for him and praying for our kids. You know, selfishly, you want that. Like, you want somebody to be petitioning God on your behalf. And that's what we wanted. Number two, I feel like I've never felt so alone in my grief. And when I would hear or see somebody else that could relate, it made me feel less lonely. So it's not always for everybody. And you take a lot of heat a lot of times.
Did you?
Yeah. And the thing with Everett was, he actually, so at his visitation, so that was about a week, maybe a week and a half, because honestly, after he died, I could not plan a funeral. I told Josh, I go, I cannot do this. Like, I know that people, there's like this, these all funeral rules, like you're supposed to plan a funeral X amount of days from the time somebody died. And I could not do
it. That seems like a form of torture.
Oh, and I physically couldn't do it. And that's what I told, and we had the sweetest funeral home, like insanely sweet. But I just told them, I go, I can't do this. Like, do I have to do this now? Like, can we wait? And they were like, you can take all the time you want. And they were so precious. But at his visitation, so this is like a week and a half probably after he died, our surgeon called us and said that one of Everett's blood cultures had come back with a really rare microbacterium, which had caused an infection in Everett's body. So what actually unfolded with Everett was his heart function was actually better. But over time, what we realized, and after, like, he has an entire team at Mott that is still looking at his case because of the rarity of the bacterium that grew in his body. What happened is he got this microbacterium that does not show up on cultures for like 8 weeks. So there was nobody knew what was going on. Nobody could figure it out. And he had contracted this really rare microbacterium. And then it went nuts in his body, basically, and was not letting him recover. And like the heat that we got one of the things that I hope, I always long to be a kind person on the internet. Like, I want to be somebody that's kind to other people on the internet, because we don't know somebody's story. We don't know every piece of it. We can't even begin to grasp somebody else's story based on squares and a certain limited character of words, you know? And so we would get people saying, well, why would you even choose to do the surgery if, you know, like, they don't have all the pieces. Like, they didn't know all the pieces of his story.
That is absolutely flabbergasting to me that somebody would.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then you get, like, people sending you, like, all this information about, like, leaving your child on life support for 70 days and they recovered and they made a full healing, and that we just didn't give God a chance to heal Everett.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That makes me so angry.
I know. It was insane. So
how do you handle that? So what do you do?
I delete messages, because I also, because I want to strive to be kind, because what I really want to do to those people is I want to, like, say something really, really ugly and use lots of curse words.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And all bold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the caps yelling. And I know that that's not kind. So I just delete those messages. I didn't need that.
I'm sorry on behalf of for all of that. So ridiculous.
Well, and I think that in our day and age, being kind on the internet just goes so far and is just so, so important.
Whether you are a busy professional, a parent on the go, or you're just looking for high quality supplements, Aura Organic has the cleanest, most delicious nutritional products available. You know how when you go to the store and you walk down the aisles, you see lots of organic potato chips, vegan ice cream, all those fancy cleaning products? But what about conscious nutritional supplements? Aura Organic solves that problem. They offer a subscription service that's free to cancel or skip for all your nutritional products. It's convenient, you get 20% off all products, and there's no more running to the drugstore. Aura Organics doesn't include ingredients in the products that they don't believe are necessary. That's why they are organic, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, non-GMO, and they don't contain anything artificial. The word Aura comes from a New Zealand greeting, Kia Ora, which literally translates to be well. To them, being well means creating quality nutritional products that are also delicious, because you're going to eat them if they're delicious. I personally have been trying their products and they really are delicious. So try Aura Organic today. You'll get 15% off your first order when you use the code MSW at checkout. So go to aura.organic.com and use the code MSW at checkout for 15% off your first order. So you've had the service. You are now, like, in quote unquote regular life. Yeah. Like, it's back to regular life. How are the Kellys doing today?
The Kellys are still doing pretty terrible. I think that grief is such a long road. At least for us, it's been. Obviously, I cannot speak for everybody, but we still struggle every single day. And we're never going to not miss him. Like, that's just not an option. You know, it's just been this process of not only, like, figuring out your own grief and your own sadness and your pain and, like, trying to move through that and process it yourself, but then Josh is doing his, and then we have five children that are all doing theirs. And so,
yeah,
it's like a job. It's like a full-time job, because everybody's different. Like, not one of us are the exact same. So you have seven people that are grieving, and you've got seven people that all grieve differently. And it's like figuring out all of that is a job. It's a full-time job.
How do you make space for that?
Everything falls to the side. Like, everything. Everything else falls to the side. Like, we have lost relationships because we can't keep them going, because all we can keep doing right now is surviving. Like, we are in full-on survival mode. And it's like, you know, I have to tell our kids' teachers, I'm sorry that I forgot to send in whatever. You know, it's like everything that really doesn't matter has to fall to the wayside, because you have got some serious, serious healing and work to do in your own house. And I've told my friends, I'm a terrible friend right now, and I'm sorry. One of my biggest things for people, other people on the outside of grief, like, if you have somebody that you've lost, that person deserves so much grace because they're probably not going to remember your birthday. Like, they're probably not going to think to text you because, you know, you had something big coming up in your own life. It's like tunnel vision. And for me, that has been so difficult because my mom's death was very different from Everett's. And I could still kind of keep myself going. And not that I'm like a great person, but I like to be a nice person. Like, I like to be, you know, I like to send cards. Thoughtful, I like to be thoughtful. Yeah. But since Everett died, it's like everything just drops. Because if I put my feet on the floor in the morning and I get up and I kiss my kids and like get them breakfast, it's like day one. Like, that's great. Like, pat on the back, Laura. Because like from the time you wake up till the time you go to bed, that's where your head is. You're thinking about my son died. My kid is down the street in the ground. And it's like, you just, it's constant and it's exhausting. And for us, it's just been, you know, we pulled everybody from extracurricular activities. Okay. It's just like this up and down too. Like, you push yourself to go like get out of the house and go do something. And then when we're out, everybody is like, can we just go home? We just want to go home. You know, so then we go home and then we stay home. And then they're like, maybe we should go out to eat. So we go out to eat and everybody's like, let's just go home. So like, it's just this constant.
Yeah. Like an itch you can't scratch. Yes, like you can't relieve it.
Escape it right now. And I know there will be, I don't want a message of dread of like, this is, but I mean, we're 6 months in and it's,
no, but it's not real talk. Yeah,
it is. It's just, you know, I had somebody like, so has everything gotten back to normal at your house? And I just looked at her and said, no. No, we are so terrible. Like, and because it just is. It's like, no. And I think that I say this all the time because I didn't realize this until I had experienced loss, but time literally changes. So 6 months without Everett feels like weeks. It makes time stretch out and it just slows down to a snail pace. And so, and I still remember like getting to the year mark with my mom, like the 1 year anniversary of her death and being like, I thought I would be farther along than I am now, but it's just this long process and it's different for everybody, but it's just figuring out each person and what each person needs.
How are you doing that when you hardly, how are you figuring out you can hardly even do your own day.
Every Wednesday we go to therapy. Like Wednesday, we have a standing therapy appointment every Wednesday.
You all go together or you all go separately?
So if somebody is having a better week and somebody else is having a worse week, that person gets to sub in and they get to take time. But even like therapy has been, you figure out, like we put them all in group together at first. Our youngest, our foster daughter, she actually does solo by herself 3 times a week. But then the rest of us are every Wednesday. The boys like did a group grief counseling extended amount of time at their school with their school counselor. Okay. So they did I want to say 2 months of that. And then we go see our family therapist and everybody just kind of rotates in. And it was kind of interesting even figuring that out because at first we put Harper, Hudson, Solomon, and Eamon, everybody in together. And after that, all three of them said, we never want to do therapy with Eamon again. Eamon talks and talks and talks and won't be quiet. And he didn't let anybody else get a word in. And he just chatter, and he didn't stop. And so the other three just didn't get to say anything and didn't get to share anything. He but that's Eamon. He's just kind of got this big personality. Harper likes to go by herself, so she goes by herself. And then Hudson tried going by himself, but Hudson didn't like going by himself. It made him too sad. So him and Saul like going together. And so it's like figuring out that as well.
Yeah. Wow. I love that you're giving them the space to do it and providing the resources.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about God.
Okay.
Prompted you to do this.
Yep.
What the heck? So where are you at with your relationship with the Lord?
I'll be really super brutal honest. I really don't like Jesus very much right now. Okay. I love Jesus immensely, but I do not like him right now. I have a lot of questions. I don't trust it yet. I try to read a lot of I can't even read a book yet, but I try to read from other parents, that have gone through it kind of, And a lot of them say that they don't like it, but they can trust it. And that's not me yet, very truthfully.
You mean trust God?
I
or
don't
what?
Trust this plan yet. I don't trust what happened to Everett yet. I'm constantly telling myself the reminder of, Laura, you're not God. So you don't get an explanation. You don't get a reason why. You don't get to necessarily have an understanding yet because he's God and you're not. And so there's this constant, I want to knock myself down a peg, because what I do a lot is I bring myself up a peg by saying, this is BS. This isn't how this was supposed to go. How, you know, why would we fight to get to him and then bring him home and then him go through and then him contract some rare microbacterium that nobody could see coming and nobody could fight? Like they didn't even know he had it. And it was
except
like, God.
Except God.
Yeah.
God could have stopped it. Yeah.
And then I think all these people were praying. And so right now, I don't really like him. But what I do know is that that's okay. I don't have to get this right now. God knows pain and suffering, and he knows my heart. And he knows that I love him immensely. But none of my doubts or my questions are ever going to run him off. And that's what I keep telling myself, is that, you know what, you process and you grieve and you ask your questions. And Laura, you try to poke your holes in, you know, all of this right now, because God's not going anywhere. He is big enough for this. And no matter what, he loves me and he loves Everett. And he loves Josh and he loves all of my other children. And I think that's the biggest comfort to me, honestly, is that no matter how pissed off I get and no matter what I say, I am not going to run him away. And so I think that brings comfort, because I think a lot of times we want to be shamed for feeling the way I feel right now. And we want to say to other people, you just need to be okay with this because this was God's plan. And I dare say, I don't think this was part of God's plan. You know, it's like, I think that God is so saddened by this. I know that he knew it was going to happen, but I don't think that he created Everett and then said, now I'm going to give him this microbacterium and he's going to die and everybody's going to like, no, like I don't believe that. Do I think that he has purpose? Absolutely, because I don't want Everett to die and not be used. Like, I don't want him to die in vain. Like, I absolutely believe that God uses these really, really terrible things in our life and brings glory to himself and uses it for good and all of that. But I don't have to like be like, yay, Jesus right now.
Yeah. I love that you're giving yourself that freedom, because if you don't, you can't get better.
And I think that as people who love God and Jesus and like we're these Christian people, I think a lot of times we want to fix people like me right now. We decide, oh, she is just not where she's supposed to be. And this
enough's enough.
Yeah. And this is not okay. And it is my responsibility as your fellow Christian to fix you. Yeah. And that's what I call no on. Like, it's not anybody else's responsibility to fix me. It, because the only fixer is Jesus. Like, he's going to be the ultimate one that fixes me, and not even that I'm broken right now, but that moves me towards healing. Yeah. But we take it upon ourselves to think we have to fix other people. And honestly, I think that when we do that, a lot of what we've experienced is it's not loving. I think that a lot of times it's presented in a way that's not loving, and it just makes us feel worse about ourselves.
Yeah. What do people not say? Like, what are you hearing that you're like, for the love of God, people stop saying this thing to
me? Well, first of all, telling you that it was God's plan for Everett to die. You should not tell a parent that has just lost a child that this was God's plan. You just shouldn't. Because honestly, there's 1,000 other things that you could say. And just not taking on that responsibility for somebody else. Like, it's not your job to fix me. As Christians, ultimately, what we're called to do is we're called to love. So if you want to take any job on, why don't you take on the job of just loving me? You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, just love on me. That's all you have to do.
And I think, didn't you say, like, take my kids to the park?
Yes. Like, this is the biggest thing is, again, this is just from our experience, but what we got a ton of was, what can we do for you? What can we do for you? What can you do for you? And honestly, anybody that ever asked me that, I did not tell them anything because I didn't know what to tell them. Like, I didn't know what to say that we needed from that person, because my head spins in 1,000 different directions of like, gosh, you're already so busy. And I know you're already so busy. I don't want to add something else. I don't want to add myself to your plate of things to do. Also, I didn't want to try to figure out, okay, what would that person be good at doing for us? Because I would get messages of, you know, oh, we've had a family that's, you know, what can we do for that family? And I would just say, do what you do best. Like, what do you do? What are you good at? I have a friend that loves cleaning houses for people, like when they're in these kind of situations. That's what she does. So we came home from Mott and our house was completely spotless. She just cleaned our house. I have another friend who, she just will call me like randomly or text me and just say, hey, I'm going to bring dinner on Wednesday. Do you want Chili's or Longhorns? Like, so she goes ahead and takes all the work out of it for me. She tells me what day she's bringing dinner. She tells me which places to choose from. And she still gives me the dignity of picking my food. Like, okay, hey, and we have food allergies. So it's like, okay, hey, I can do that. I can pick from a menu what I want to eat. That is what's so helpful is when people just do what they do best for you. Anything that anybody's ever done for us, I never looked back over it and said, gosh, that person really should have come and taken my kids out instead of sending me a gift card for Chick-fil-A. Like, you don't do that. You're just like, God, that was so kind for them to send us a Chick-fil-A gift card. You know what I mean? It's like, just do what you do best and show up for that person. Like, when you disappear, it's the worst. It is the worst when people just disappear, because this already isolates. Trauma, loss, grief, pain, it already isolates you. And then for people to just, you know, walk away because they don't know what to say, or they don't know how to handle you, or they're afraid of saying the wrong thing, or they're afraid they're going to remind you of your pain. That's ridiculous.
I'm already thinking about it.
24/7. 24/7. Nobody's ever going to remind us that Everett died. What they do is, when they talk about him or say his name or ask how our kids are doing or ask us how we're really doing or tell a funny story they remember about him or say, gosh, I miss him. All they do is confirm in us that we're not crazy. Like,
okay, so it's helpful.
Oh my gosh, yes. Like, to hear his name is so validating to us as parents, because one of your worst fears is that your child is going to disappear. Like, nobody ever is going to remember him again. Like, it's on you to keep his little memory alive forever. So when somebody does that for you, it just lifts you. Like, it makes you feel so seen and so loved and so cared for and so not like a crazy lunatic, because I mean, at least for us, that's how I feel all the time. It's like, I'm a crazy person. So having that, it's invaluable.
I love it. That's really good. Cause I do think people are like, what do I do? Yes. Go the other way. Oh, yeah. You know?
And when that happens, it's like, because you're thinking about it all the time, when something is not said, or when somebody doesn't reach out, you feel forgotten. This is how simple it can be. I will never, ever forget. Me and Josh went to a concert. It was the second time we had been out since Everett had died, just me and Josh. And it was, some friends had sent us out. Like, they'd got us tickets to a concert and gotten us a gift card to go and eat. And it was really nice. But we're like already thinking about Everett and like crying over dinner. And, you know, and we go into this concert, and this couple that we have not seen in years, the wife walks right over to me and she says, I am so sorry about Everett. Let me buy you a drink. And I, in that moment, it was like, it's that simple. It really is that simple of just like, I have not seen these people in forever, but they knew what happened. And instead of turning around or pretending like they don't see us, which would have been, I mean, they haven't seen us in years, completely validated. You don't owe me anything. But she looks me square in the eyes and tells me how sorry she is and says his name to me and says, let me buy you a drink. And that was it. I felt like in that instant, she made me feel seen and known. And she reminded me that people are still thinking about our son.
That's good. It's so practical.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so scary because you don't want to do the wrong thing.
Oh, yeah.
There's a man in my church, and his wife passed away like last week, and little kids, and now he's a widower. And Honestly, I didn't know. I don't know him very well. I just know that his wife passed away. And I just turned to walk the other way because I'm like, I will walk up to him and be crying. And I don't know him. And that's weird. But I probably should have done a different thing. Good thing is I have another chance every week.
Hey, and that is the thing. And like, that's the thing is it's never too late to, you know, not even make it right, just to be nice. You know what I mean? Like, just to be... Yeah. To extend somebody a hand that feels like a lifeline. And all of those little things add up and make you feel like, hey, maybe I'm not going to drown today. Like, maybe today's not my day.
Okay. Well, Laura, bless your thinking whole heart. Thank you so much for sharing all this. I know I can't even imagine. And I remember when I messaged you, I was like, am I being so inappropriate here? But I just felt like there's something about the way you share this, and there's something about the fact that you are. And there's also something about someone still being in it and not being like 10 years ago. Yes. I appreciate your bravery and your openness. And I think it helps so many people in so many ways that you won't even know this side of heaven, you know?
Right. Well, thanks for reaching out. I thought you were crazy too, by the way. I was like, what? I don't even know if you remember my message back, but I was like, I don't think I have much to offer somebody.
But you do. I mean, obviously, you see the way that people are responding to the things that you're saying on Instagram, at least. So,
I mean, honestly, it comes down to everything in life, any hardship. I mean, when it's hard, it's hard. Like when they're just struggling to feel like, oh my God, it's not just me. You know, I'm really not the only person that's driving down the road screaming curse words and crying, like, you know, or I'm not standing in front of the Kroger mascara aisle sobbing. I'm not the only one. Somebody else is doing something weird like me too. It's just validating.
Is it helpful to talk to other women who've had lost their children?
It's been different. I think that when somebody really wants to talk about it, it is great. I think that when somebody just wants to tell you their story, that it's a little hard because, at least for me, it was really hard handling. Like, I had to have a time frame where I stopped opening mail and I stopped reading messages because I felt so much weight. And then I felt like I was taking on other people's weight. And I think that it is really incredible when somebody wants to share your story with them. And so I didn't want it to be weighty. Like, I wanted to treat their stories with care. And I couldn't do that at that time. But I got to a point where I could finally start reading through mail and I could start reading other people's stories. One of the best things for us was going to group grief counseling. It's a grief group. Okay. It's called Compassionate Friends, and they have a chapter in Nashville, and it's once a month, and you go and you sit in a room with all these other parents who have also lost their children. And the first thing you do is they pass around a microphone and you are allowed to say your child's name, and you're allowed to tell how he passed away and how old they were when they passed away. And so that's the first thing you do. And it's like to be in a room with a whole bunch of people that recognized that one of the greatest things that we can give each other is just allowing us to say our child's name, like from the get-go, and to acknowledge the pain that we sit with daily was incredible. And so we go every Sunday and we sit with these people, and they, you know, they do different things. They have panels where you get to hear from siblings or you get to hear from grandparents. And then you break up into smaller groups. We're in a smaller group of children 3 and under that have died. And so, but they have different things. Like, they have suicide and they have, you know, overdose, and they have undiagnosed medical condition. Like, they have it all broken up where you can like sit with people that feel what you feel. We're never going to feel the same because our children weren't the same and we're not the same, but we can relate on a level that feels like nobody else can relate to. So that has been so, so helpful and so, so valuable to us for sure.
Okay. So I think that you probably know this maybe, but I just feel compelled to tell you, like, you are doing a really good job at grieving. It feels like you're doing the right things. And I know it feels like such crap, like so remarkably worse than the worst thing ever, but you're doing it and you're like fully in it. You know what I mean? Like, so many people just go to different things and numb it. And that's not, I don't know. I'm proud of you. I know that you don't know me, and I know that that doesn't matter, but I think you're doing a really good job.
It's really, like, it makes me just want to sob because, you know, we go to bed every night thinking, how are we doing this, and how do we keep doing this, and you feel like you're failing. You feel like you're failing your partner. You feel like you're failing your children, and so to hear that somebody thinks that I'm doing a good job is just, it's nice. It's really nice. So thank you.
Well, gosh, thank you for doing. I mean, honestly, you're going first and like leading the way and letting us know, like, what does this even look like? I really appreciate that. I've appreciated that about you since, you know, years ago. And you have no idea what an impact you're making. So thank you for that. I know. Gosh. It does not get less awkward to talk about this, does it?
It's just no. But you know what? It feels good. Like, it's nice to talk about him. And I mean, it's hard, but it's so nice because oftentimes it's just me and Josh talking about him, you know, or kind of random people. But so it's really nice to be able to talk about him because he was so special and is so special and, you know, just changed our life. So yeah. Sure.
Okay. Well, now you can just tell people, listen to this, and you don't have to say the story. If you have any questions, talk to me after you've listened to this. It's got to be hard to keep talking about it. Like, maybe. Is it hard or is it still helpful?
I think it depends on the motive behind talking about it, if that makes sense. I think that sometimes people have alternative motives that aren't probably healthy and good for us.
Like, they're just curious, like morbid curiosity.
Or kind of judgmental. Like, they're wanting to kind of judge instead of like genuinely wanting.
I want to punch them. What?
I this is what I say all the time, is when somebody genuinely ask you how you are, you know. I mean, at least for me, and I know that I can go into a, you know, this is really, that we're really struggling, or I feel comfortable enough. I like to be open with the fact that we're doing terrible, but I mean, you know, like the ugly details of it, you know, you can tell. And so I think that those people that genuinely want, it's nice to be able to share when somebody genuinely wants to know.
Well, thank you for, I don't know how to land this plane. It's just been so, before we got on, I just was sitting here like, and I started crying. We weren't even on yet. I'm like, oh my God, so heavy. But anyway, I appreciate you so much.
And thanks for doing this. Thanks for rolling the dice on me.
Ooh, it was intense. So good though. So good to know that God is big enough to handle us being mad at him. He doesn't get mad at us back. I love Laura's honesty. I hope that was a blessing to you. I hope it was balm for your heart if you are grieving, just to know that you're simply not alone. Sometimes that just really helps. And it doesn't have to be grieving a death. It could be grieving a dream, grieving the way you hoped a relationship would be, that it's just never going to be. There's a lot of things that we grieve, and I believe there's a way to do it well, but I believe it's something that none of us want to touch with a 10-foot pole, so we don't end up doing it well because we don't want to look at it. So I hope that this was helpful. It was really helpful to me. I think there's several things we can take away with this, several strategies to struggle well. Number one, don't be judgy to people who are doing things in a way that you don't agree with, but in a situation that you've never been in. And I promise you, situations are so different. It's very hard to say that you've been in the exact same situation as someone else. I loved her idea of just do the thing that you love to do. That's the way you serve the person. Don't make the person tell you what they need. Now, when you legitimately have no idea what they need, I mean, there's asking that question is a good question, but I loved how she said, like, that's just one more thing for me to think about. And I'm not functioning right now. So do the thing you do. And it's easier for you because if what you do is you make a really mean lasagna, then you don't have to wonder what you do. You just make the lasagna and put it on their porch. So maybe this week you struggle well by thinking, what would be my one thing that I do? Like, what am I a rock star at? And if it's something that you can do ahead of time, even if you're just thinking about how to manage loving, grieving people, do it ahead of time and have them ready if you make blankets. Or, I mean, I have no idea what you people do, but I bet it's amazing. If there's something you can do ahead of time, just be ready to bless people who need something. Maybe you're in the middle of just a pit of despair and you hadn't thought about going to like a group for people who are dealing with the same thing. How comforting to know you're not alone, you know? Maybe you're grieving and you've been saying like, I'm fine, it's fine, everything's fine, we're fine. But that's not even close to true. What I love that Laura says is, yeah, we're not doing well. Love it. So maybe give yourself permission this week to say, I'm not doing well. I think you will be amazed at how much better you will do once those words are out of your mouth. You're being honest. If they don't like it, they can handle it. You can find a new person to play bridge with. I don't know why that was the first thing that came to my mind. I do not play bridge. Whatever. My brain. I loved her suggestion to just say something. Say, I'm sorry. Don't avoid them. Which was obviously convicting to me because that's exactly what I've been doing with the guy at church. I legitimately don't even know his name. that would be a good place to start. You can find Laura on Instagram at PitterPatterArt. You can also find her at PitterPatterArt.com. She's a remarkably talented artist. I have some of her pieces in my home. Hey, ladies, I think you're fantastic. I'm so honored to have spent this time with you today. I know you don't got a lot of time. I appreciate your notes and I appreciate your messages. I love your reviews and your ratings. It really, it helps the show be seen, but honestly, I gotta say, I'm a person and I love knowing that what I'm spending my time on is valuable. So thank you for that. I'd love if you'd come find me on Instagram and Facebook at Mom Struggling Well. Sign up to get the newsletter that comes out every week at momstrugglingwell.com. It's super short and sweet. I try to make it funny, interesting, life-changing. So if you want your life changed once a week, I'm not saying if it's going to be for the better or the worse, but I promise life change if you sign up for my newsletter. I even offer a money-back guarantee, so there's that. All right, ladies, let me pray for us. Lord, you told us that in this world we will have trouble, and you were not freaking kidding. Sometimes the pain that we go through, Lord, is so excruciating. It literally feels like our heart is going to break in half. Thank you that you know the same thing happened to you. You are acquainted with suffering and grief. You're referred to as the man of sorrows. So that's a pretty legit title. I still don't like that it happens, but I'm thankful that you get it. God, would you comfort the Kelly family so ridiculously strongly? God, would people not forget to remember Everett? Would they not forget to comfort the Kelly family? Because I know from what I've heard, when life goes back to normal, and I'm using air quotes, it's not normal for them. So I pray that you would help their close circle remember to remember. I pray that you'd help us all comfort grieving people better. I pray that you would strengthen us to be honest about where we're at if we are actually grieving ourselves. And may all of us just remember that you are our hope. Even if we're mad at you, even if we don't understand, and so we're just like giving you the silent treatment, God, would you kindle the flame inside of us that knows that you are where our hope is found. Zechariah 9:12, I just learned this from my Rev on the Road Revelation Wellness little thing I went to this weekend. It says, "Return to your stronghold, O prisoners of hope." And this is God talking. "For I declare today that I will restore to you double." Lord, you never take something away if it's not for our good. And I'm telling you, our tiny brains just want to revolt against that and say, that's baloney. And I'm toning it down a lot. Lord, I feel angry that you took Everett and babies, and I'm angry for abuse, and I'm angry for all those things that happened. But may we this week be prisoners of hope, even when we feel super mad about things. Thank you that you can handle our anger. Thank you that you can handle our honesty. And thank you that the hope that you offer us, Romans tells us, will not disappoint. In Jesus' name, amen.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.